Welcome to the 18 Group podcast on best practices for regulatory reporting efficiency, recorded at the RegTech Summit for Capital Markets held on October the 4th, 2018 in the City of London. Moderated by James Phillips, Global Head of Regulatory Strategy at Lombard Risk, our panel of experts includes David Masters, Director of Operations Regulatory Reporting and Referential Data Coordinator at Societe Generale, Surya Subramanian, Consultant at BNY Mellon, Daniel Percy Hughes, Principal Consultant at Synchron, and Tom Morris, Head of Sales for Europe at RegTech Solutions. The podcast explores a wide range of detailed reg reporting issues, including what is needed to get ready for SFTR and how to ensure your reporting infrastructure is ready, how to improve the quality, consistency, and standardization of data, the latest news on identifiers and messaging standards, the foundations for granular data reporting and how firms are addressing the challenges of data collection, the potential for DLT to facilitate the efficient exchange of data between all reporting stakeholders, and how firms are using analytics to gain insight beyond regulatory compliance for added business value.
My name is James Phillips. FirmEgg is the company I'm with now, formerly known as Lombard Risk. I need to say that because some of you may have seen two versions of the agendas and so on. We're highly specialised in regulatory reporting. I'm concerned about strategy, how we execute that best. So actually best practices around this is quite important to me. And I'm hoping to be able to steer this conversation to your satisfaction today. Briefly, just two words about FirmEgg as well, not just regulatory reporting. We have a few other things, strings in our bow, and I won't take any more of the time to look us up. Okay, so that's where we're at. Particularly today, one thing I want to just draw out, and I'm conscious of this from our own work in regulatory reporting, is the transition, if you will, from sampling, exception-based, cyclical snapshots and so on towards a more, what I call my language is always on. I don't mean necessarily real-time, but a much more transactional-based, granular-based reporting process, which is more automatic, it's more exception-based. It requires maybe a different approach and a different set of tools to achieve the end game that everybody wants. That's particularly focus relevant for us. It's equally relevant, I hope, for most of the people in the room. As we go towards that, it puts a number of challenges around infrastructure, around data quality, around the kind of step-up that you need to achieve in terms of performance and scalability, and it draws into question possibly new processes that you might need to use to actually execute your reg reporting as well. Those are the challenges we're going to be talking about today. Those are the reach fours that we're looking for in terms of best practices around data quality, scalability, process changes, and so on. That's it for the preamble. I'm going to ask my colleagues on the panel to introduce themselves so they can do so much better than I can. David?
Thank you. So I'm David Masters from SocGen. The title's slightly confusing, so I've only just moved to be Chief Data Officer as of a couple of days ago. But prior to that, I've been involved in regulatory reporting for some 12 or so years, and more recently looking across referential data across the different reporting. So it's something that has been very close to me in my work, and we've seen, and I know we'll talk about this a bit more, but very much the data sort of approaches from firms have been very much driven by regulatory requirements very recently. So moving from one side to the other is going to be very interesting.
Thank you. Surya.
As Surya Subramanian, I'm an independent consultant working currently at BNY Mellon. Previous background is setting up data literature in terms of establishing chief data officer functions for banks and data governance frameworks, so everything around data. Predominantly a process guide, kind of technology agnostic in terms of whatever tool that you use. Do you have the right framework, the right process, the right controls surrounding that?
Thank you very much. Daniel.
Dan Percy Hughes. I work in the regulatory practice at Synchron. We're a consulting technology and digital innovation services firm specialising in financial services. I'm interested in this topic because it's the type of work that we do. We have a record of regulatory change projects, both in an advisory and delivery capacity, across a spectrum of regulation, across a global client base. We've done a lot within DLT. We've worked with Corda on their layer 2 KYC collaboration, partnered with a number of large investment banks on their pilot DLT schemes.
Tom? Yep.
Tom Morris here from RegTech Solutions. We provide software solutions to help investment firms achieve what we call sustainable compliance, which is essentially apply the same quality assurance solutions to all of their various jurisdictions and obligations globally, where cost and risk are on a downward trend.
I was going to say, before I ask you to introduce yourselves, to also add what you hope to get out of the panel, but I hope you will accept my introduction as being a decent shot. We're looking to call out the key best practice changes and challenges. All right, so we haven't got too long to do that, but we'll give it a try. So we're going to follow, give or take, for those of you that are in the audience, we're going to be following the bullets that are actually on your agenda, and I've got a couple of questions to ask afterwards if nobody on the floor wants to. So we'll see how we go with that. Okay. So the first one actually is around getting ready for SFTR, EMEA refit, and so on, what's left to do, ensuring the infrastructure is up to scratch. I think, Tom, you were going to lead on that one.
Yeah, sure. So in the case of SFTR, it's a perfect example of a situation where it's actually good to be last. It's the last sort of asset class or area in the banking world. Securities financing hasn't traditionally had to do any transaction reporting. The good news is they can learn from the scars of their colleagues who've had to go through the EMIR, Dodd-Frank and MIFIR and various other implementations over recent years. There's a lot of lessons to be learned there, and you can leverage some of their experience to help you avoid some of the potential downfalls. I think getting stuck into the data as soon as possible is key. I think we're targeting a Q1 2020 go live, which might seem like a long time, but it's actually not. As we saw with EMIR, there was very much a last-minute rush to get things put together with tactical solutions, and therefore the fallout was rather painful. So we know that there's 153 fields to be reported, and it's locating the complete set of data that needs to be reported. We know that there's a lot of antiquated technology in use in the securities financing world, so people are going to need to bring together a single source of data and manage that and control it going forward. That's by no means a simple challenge. There's a role for vendors to play there, and I know there's a number of solutions in the market to help firms source some of that data that doesn't currently exist within their infrastructure. Matching fields, we also hear from Go Live that there are going to be 62 fields that firms must match on through the matching and reconciliation process. But just the sort of talk of the volumes here, we're not just talking about the trades, but also the life cycle events. So the kind of numbers that are being spoken about are really quite scary, and the obvious exceptions that will spring up as a result of that are really quite daunting. So firms need to think strategically about this, not just put together another tactical solution where you end up with yet another reporting infrastructure hub to maintain. You need to equip your staff with the relevant control and management oversight framework so they can deal with this huge number of exceptions. I'm aware that there are a number of market participants involved in a sort of reconciliation process with their counterparties to try and iron out some of the discrepancies in the way firms book and record these transactions to try and sort of mitigate the number of potential exceptions they'll get at go live.
Thank you, Tom. I'm just going to ask for a reflection, maybe from a financial institution's perspective, David. You may have heard that question coming, but there you go. Yes. You've heard a vendor view, I mean, some of the practical things that, Tom, you come across in your world. What do you find about, again, if we can focus on infrastructure, how ready is that? Some of the challenges about, what was the wording, out-of-date architecture or old infrastructure?
Antiquated.
That's
yes.
The word.
Legacy. I think, I mean, Tom, you know, has quite rightly identified a lot of the areas that, as a firm, we would be looking at, particularly the challenge that it is new regulation, so we have the added piece of interpreting something that is new and trying to be consistent with the approach. And there I'd say, you know, definitely as a firm, and I know the vendors as well, to get involved in the different working groups, such as the ICMA, ISLA, those are probably the two main ones that are very much involved. And I know they've been looking at sort of infrastructure and software and some of the challenges that again, Tom's mentioned about the fact that we're talking about a very wide set of data, a very new set of data, something that is not probably as mature as trade and position and that sort of thing. So it is a very sort of new area. And then trying to apply something that's already mature, such as we mentioned EMIR in the question, that there are a lot of similarities in the approach that the regulator's taken with EMIR, but there are a lot of differences as well in what you're actually trying to report. So, you know, definitely don't try and fit a square peg in a round hole. You have to understand where the differences are. I think the only other sort of point, and then we'll come on to this, is trying to get as close to the truth as possible. And I think that that's sort of a challenge that we definitely have with SFTR, again, because there are so many different moving parts to integrate and report on. And so you sort of have that in the back of your mind whilst trying to make sure that obviously you're compliant with the reporting.
Thank you. Okay, now some of these points we'll fold back onto, I suspect, as we go through. Before we move on to the second point, I wanted just to give a tiny bit of background before we dig into it around data quality, consistency, standardization, and so on. If only to reflect from our own personal experience, and I didn't mention this in the initial intro, but I might end up chipping in. We've been ourselves quite involved in the UK regulators and other initiatives around digital regulatory reporting, which have got an underpinning bunch of, should we say, dependencies around data quality, clearly, or certainly data standardization could be one of the ones that's still sitting there as a sticking point before you can move forward to higher degrees of automation. So I'm really seeing that's what this second bullet's around, improving the quality, consistency, and standardization of data. So there are questions posed in the bullet around the latest on standards, but could I also just first of all ask that point I made in my preamble around the dependency on those standards. We're not having a standard, but we have got to have one, yes, against these different points. I don't know whether we should stick with you, David, from a practical perspective, in terms of firms.
Yes, so I think firstly, it is very positive that we are sort of seeing a lot more use of standards in the reporting. So we've mentioned, things like ISO 20082 from a reporting messaging perspective as a standard, LEIs, ISIN, CFI codes. These are all definitely sort of in the right direction and seeing that regulators are adopting these. I think in a way it's also a slightly double-edged sword. So I think we've heard before about LEIs and the fact that it's definitely something which is a very positive approach in identifying legal entities globally. It's something that by and large is being bought into, although there are still some regions that haven't yet adopted fully the LEI, which is a slight challenge. But the fact that it's something that's consistent as a standard and that you can say, right, I've got a legal entity and I've identified it with a particular identifier and it's consistent and there's a lot of rules around how you manage that identifier. Where I'd say it's a double-edged sword is if you take ISIN, so again, a very well-known international standard for numbering products, great. And we've seen the use of an adoption of ISINs for OTC derivatives for MIFID, MIFID II, MIFIR. Okay, not bad. It's an opportunity to start to think in a standard way for your OTC derivatives. Where I think it doesn't necessarily work is where you've got regulators or specific regulators in regions adopting something for a specific part of the market. So with MIFIR, we saw ISINs for listed derivatives, but only listed derivatives in Europe. So now we've got a difference in our standards where we've said, okay, we want to identify them one way, which is, by the way, not the industry norm. When you trade listed derivatives, you don't, and I've said this a few times when I've spoken, you don't trade with an ISIN, you don't clear with an ISIN, you don't do your positions and margins with ISINs. It's a layer on top that the regulators ask for only in Europe. So it's not even consistent when you're reporting non-European products. So I think there are some lessons to be learned as far as, we've seen something that works with LEIs and something that doesn't quite work. And maybe it's a case of, I don't know, whether politics and that sort of thing get in the way with our regulators. We really want the regulators to be as consistent as possible to when they're both adopting the standards, agreeing the standards, but then how they implement the standards in reporting.
So I'm not entirely sure who I'm asking this of, but if you were, again, in respect of this theme, we're looking for best practices in regulatory reporting specifically, which number one challenge would you want cleared around standardisation? Who wants to go for that? This is not a pre-prepared question, guys. Yeah. Is it, let's have a cross-regulators agreement about what's the next big standard? LEI's done, what's next after that? Is the one thing that you could all wish for? Anyone? Who wants to risk it?
I don't think so. It's any kind of typical agreement with even things like security identifiers or AVIs. There is working on a program called ANACredit, which is a European regulation. the different, we report to Bundesbank, the Central Bank of Luxembourg, and National Bank of Belgium. They all have different views, different opinions in terms of what they would consider as a valid identifier when they're reporting a counterparty. So I'm not sure whether even the basics, some of the things they're not getting it right, or there's no standardization involved across all of the regulators. So it is a big leap of faith for them, for us to expect there'll be some kind of standardization.
Yeah, and I know Beju from Bank of England mentioned earlier that to look at UTIs and UPIs. Again, I think, yes, that's going to be an interesting area to see, but it's going to be, again, the application of those and how you make it consistent. And not only that, but it's going to be the cost of putting that into your existing infrastructure. And I think, again, that's maybe where the regulators and others are not quite there yet, because, okay, the ideal would be that you have a standard transaction ID, that you are consistent internally, externally, in the same way that we talked about LEI being consistent internally and externally, and think about how you adopt that. And it would be interesting to see whether it works or not.
I think one direction I'd like to see go in, it's not necessarily my top one, but the standards that we use in what is or how things are to be reported to be applied to the scope of what is to be reported. So I like the direction the FCA is going with digitising their handbook, that participants can then have an unambiguous view of scope by a globally agreed set of standards.
Yeah, okay. We certainly, for what it's worth, can observe as a participant in that process the huge benefits that are coming out from a highly collaborative, discursive, inclusive discussion around, you know, is it a question of cracking standards, or you've got to wait for the holy grail of some form of interoperability, or what? But at least everybody's talking about it now, much more than was the case perhaps a year ago. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Again, we might circle back on some of these points. We then moving on to the next one, which is again in the bullets, laying the foundations for granular data reporting. And I think Soraya, you mentioned Anna Credit just now as a live example of that. So again, are the specific challenges around data collection? Is this new levels of granularity that's now got to go production quality, which was perhaps not the case before? What are your experiences around that, and what could we all learn from those, please?
Yeah, Anna Credit is a data-driven regulation where, you know, historically financial institutions were reporting their balance sheet and like FinRep and CoreRep. That's something that probably we're all aware of. It's still at an aggregated level. Either report them at individual, you know, a credit rating or a counterparty type, etc. Whereas the ECB is going down the direction, you know, Tom earlier talked about the SFTR, where you have to provide individual data items for each of the exposures. And different regulators, you know, talking about standardization, different regulators talking about different thresholds on what amount that you need to report them. So Bundesbank has got 25,000 and NBB has got a zero threshold. So even if you have a credit exposure of 10 euros, which could be a rounding of error in your books, you need to report them of 100 attributes regarding that particular exposure, things like, you know, counterparty data, all the way from name, addresses of who you lend the money to, and all the way to whether, you know, granulate about the instrument itself, whether what is the interest rate, you know, what is the duration of the interest rate, is it fixed or variable, you know, what's the currency of it, and things like whether this instrument has got a protection associated with it, if it is protected, what type of protection. So it's about 100 or data attributes that you need to provide for every exposure. And the regulators are going down that route. And what it does is it poses challenges for the firms, because theoretically it sounds fantastic, but the practical implementation of it is cumbersome, because there is no one single thing, you know, Tom mentioned about single source. There is no one single source within a bank that can get all of the data. The multiple sources, a lot of times the data is not available widely in the market. You know, one of the data they're looking for is the number of employees. I mean, this is not publicly available for a large set of counterparties. So, you know, where are you going to get this type of information? So the firms are kind of challenged in terms of where to identify, how to collect this data item, which data vendor is going to provide, and what frequency, etc. The second thing is on processing. You know, how are you going to collect all of this data into a single platform, which can be checked for quality? You know, typically the finance and the risk professionals are not into the reams of data quality. For them, they look at aggregated numbers, is my counterparty exposure or country of risk exposure. Now they have to go into the depth of, is my data quality good enough for that? So it poses challenges in terms of process, data quality. And you talked about submission, even though it's an ECB kind of dominated or delegated regulation, then you have multiple host regulators and they're all interpreting them differently, how this can be implemented. So there are challenges across the firm in terms of the various stages, sourcing your data, collection of data, processing and data management, and also at the submission end. And given all of these new things, they have to deal with the legacy infrastructure, which is not geared for all of these ever-changing regulations. So the firms are struggling. I think, you know, for example, NBV recently came out saying that it's meant to go live this week. They pushed it to January because the regulators are not ready to receive the data set, even though banks have spent millions of dollars to prepare the data set to a reasonable position. But the regulators put their hands up saying, sorry, I can't deal with this. So there are problems on either side in terms of the infrastructure, both from banks and then also at the regulators end.
So Ryan, could I exercise some privilege because I may have got the biggest microphone, I don't know. But I think this is really interesting what you've pointed out, is that there is a challenge as all of these infrastructure changes at the regulator end as well. And I'm sure we probably heard that from Baiju earlier or others, and certainly I've heard, for example, Baiju or other regulators speak about the transformations that they need to achieve as well. But if you get to that future world, and I talked about always on, so a cycle of data that's flowing with less in the way of interception and so on, it becomes a matter of the regulator or the regulated focusing on that data, depending upon who's actually interested in it at the time. So I don't know whether this is next year or in 5 years' time, but that's a kind of newer world. For example, and I'll draw the distinction here, and a credit that Soraya's just drawn out is putting a new challenge on the financial reporting part of firms, whereas, let's say, SFTR and MEA may have already dealt with that challenge in the transaction reporting side of things. So it's actually rolling out the whole granular data reporting piece across a larger framework within the firm.
Everybody needs to step up to the plate in terms of, you know, EMIR and all of them. It's a pretty kind of ops-driven type of reporting rather than a finance or a risk-driven reporting. Now, everybody has to deal with this granular level of reporting across the firm. Everybody needs to learn about data governance, data quality principles, and everything else that goes with that.
Thank you so much. Daniel, I'm going to point at you because I think there's a question coming up here, which is, to what extent, and this is cheating a bit because it's on the bullet points, is DLT in any way an answer for any of these conundrums?
It can be. I'll start with the caveat that I'm not going to advocate that DLT is a panacea that can fix everything in this space. Yeah. If we think about what we want to achieve within transaction reporting, it's around accuracy and quality of data, and you know that leads to the matching between and within repositories. I think the fix there comes from the data standardization, the unambiguous technical standards, maybe even standardized data models, standardized booking practices that we've sort of spoken about elsewhere. I think if you can address those, then conceptually distributed ledger becomes a very efficient way of firms doing their transaction reporting. And there's a couple of elements to that. So one is, rather than submitting a report, they are writing to a ledger. There's pieces around transaction reporting where DLT is a very good candidate. So we spoke earlier around KYC, using a distributed ledger as an unambiguous consensus-based source of client data, such as regulatory classifications or entity location, could be a very good thing to drive these efficiencies. To make use of distributed ledger work, we would need to solve the interoperability question. So a single network where all parties must provide consensus is simply not going to work. And you know, firms will develop their own solutions and they'll use different technologies. So there'll be a need to have interoperability whereby firms can write to multiple networks at any one time, but those networks are updated simultaneously so that view of a transaction is relevant and is available to all where permissioning permits that to be the case. And then if you think This might work for transaction reporting. I think transaction reporting is a very good proof of concept in this space. You can then start asking questions of how far up the value chain do you take it? So do you want just DLT at the point of reporting, or do you bring it right up front and you start executing in DLT, and then your entire life cycle is managed there? So your settlement, your confirmation, your collateral margining is all done within a DLT framework. All the modifications are done within that framework. So your transaction reporting is going to be accurate by definition, and in some respects comes for free.
So to what extent do we get that into a production environment by when?
I think it starts with proofs of concept, as all of these things do. That was mentioned in one of the earlier panel sessions this morning, is that you need a strong business case, and then you test that business case with proof of concept. And if it doesn't work, you revisit how you make it work. I wouldn't want to use distributed ledger as a solution and try and fit that to, in inverted commas, the problem of transaction reporting. It must evolve from what the business case is.
Okay. I think I could perhaps, if anybody's aware of or following, I know I'm talking UK regulators quite a bit, but the Digital Regulatory Reporting Project, which is being run by the UK regulators, there's a website you can go to, it's all public domain stuff. That's exploring, under the pilot tests right now, the active use of DLT as a part of energising that. Yeah, so it's getting a lot of face time. I think we all need to also think in terms of the benefit to the firms, let alone just as a change in infrastructure. So if it's not, a bit obvious, obviously going back to my point about once data quality, interoperability and new tools, whether that's DLT or otherwise, are achieved, we will end up with a more straight through process, which allows us to spend more time dealing with the analytical value add content of what you've got rather than just getting the job done. So the last question I've got certainly around this is in respect of analysis. And the point I've written down here was, how are firms using analytics to slice and dice gain insights beyond just the regulatory compliance, in terms of added value around that? Dan, Soraya, somebody? Yeah.
So it's, a very simple example.
Five examples if you can.
MiFID. Requires a lot of data to be recorded. There's a big order record keeping element to that. That then provides data in a fairly normalized way that firms haven't had previously. Now, it's still limited in scope to some extent. It's that data that has a MiFID obligation. But it might enable them to make trading or sales insights because they're collecting quote and RFQ and execution data. And one example I've seen is then looking that data or trying to apply that data to FRTB and the problem around modelability of risk factors. So straight away, one piece of regulation has given a potential source of transaction or quote level data that might be used as an input to decision making in another piece of regulation.
Can I ask all of you, again, unscripted question, to what extent added value is a part of business cases being formulated now? Not just get the regulation done, but what else can we do? So if you're forming an RFI, let's say if you're the institution or if you're a vendor answering them, are you finding a lot around that as a differentiator in business cases now? Or is it not there yet?
I think it is. It is good to have them, but I think it's not there yet because the firms, especially when it comes down to regulatory compliance, they want to meet the regulation first. So the MI is an added bonus. So they kind of think of it, I may go live with this, I'm not interested in some fancy analytical tool or a visualization tool. I just want to submit this data to this regulator on this day. If you can't do it, I don't care about your visualization. So I think it's a different stance to it, but I think I agree with Dan earlier in terms of now this array of data set which were never available before. How can we use that data set maybe to complement the existing or other decision makers in the firm? Can we give this data set to them, especially talking about an accredit and some of the credit information which were not available, so we are publicly sourcing their default data, if it's liquidated or not, and this information was not available before to a credit risk team, so how can they augment their decisions with the credit rating information? So the firms are starting to use them, and I think now regulation is out of the way. So you know, controllers and finance and CFOs, they're starting to look at how they can use this data a little bit more for business value.
Andrew's introduction to this panel, I think, mentioned that use of RegTech to improve regulatory reporting efficiency was a key theme. I get that that is not just reporting that we've been talking about. It's also change management and all manner of other areas that could be covered off. We've had a run through a bunch of specific points. Thank you so much. But before we all finish, there may well be some questions. What we have focused on has been around challenges from recent regulations, improvements to data quality, the potential around standardization, and potential for tool sets such as DLT and so on to find a better world. I've tried to describe an always-on scenario where you could maybe get some added value out of that. Okay. So are there any questions? There's none that I see on Slido. Are there any on the floor?
Hi. I am Siddiquian. I'm a consultant, RegRisk consultant. The thing which I find interesting is whenever we discuss topics like this, we focus very much from inside out, looking to at the regulator. I've worked at FCA, and having worked at FCA, whenever I'm advising clients, what I find frustrating is people constantly think of all these things as problems, which obviously they are, because we have to do reporting. How do you make it less painful, less costly, and so on? As you guys know, post-MIFID, there's a huge raft of data which is going to be made available soon to us through the consolidated data tape. We don't know when, but I mean, we should be thinking more positively about how we can utilize this information, having gone through the pain barrier, for our clients and customers. And perhaps if we change the mindset towards also, why is the regulator asking for this from a MAR perspective? Why is ESMA getting all this information and so on? Then they would be less focus on the problem and the pain, and more focus on how can we make it easier for the regulator to get this from us, and where the pain points are for them.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. I think it's important to think about the positive side of it, about first, as you say, why are you actually providing this information in the first place? What's the purpose of it? And never lose sight of that when you're looking at any sort of regulation, whether it's new or existing. And similarly, yes, there are opportunities with the data set. I think the only frustration on the regulatory side is there's an awful lot of work that's being done on the ground level with national competent authorities. I think where you get a little bit of a challenge is where you start talking about European regulation and trying to get agreement across some 27 or plus national competent authorities to agree on definition. And I think we've seen a lot of frustration with even basic information not being properly defined, which therefore causes problems with the way you're reporting. Very simple one, and you can look it up afterwards. For EMIR, maturity date for listed derivatives, not actually defined which date you actually use, whether you use the last settlement date or the expiration date. There's two different dates you can report. So we're reporting two different dates because no one will actually agree on it. We've actually asked the regulator through various working groups, please define it, and they still haven't defined it. So I think that's their only frustration. If we can get over those sort of niggles and we get that buy-in, I think then absolutely we can start to move forward on really using the data properly and being consistent with our approach.
Thank you.
Just on the positive spins, I think one of them is the analytics. How can you use the data a little bit more effectively? The other one is process changes, process efficiencies. You know, while even though this granular data that comes through, which you're not visible before, but it changes your process. So somehow you identify that actually the same data is checked by four different people when it comes down to quality checks, and you see why it's happening. Why am I having all of these? So when you put together in a big process map, you see there are duplication of work involved, and somebody's taking much longer time, different vendors. So from positive side, you can actually create efficiencies because something that you are doing brand new. So I agree that it's a pain that people focus on because it's a regulatory obligation, but there are some gains to be made if you kind of pull from a process perspective and from an analytics or an insight.
I think we can have faith in the future that there would be a higher level of efficiency and output from all of this work in due course.
Thank you for listening to the A-Team Group podcast on best practices for regulatory reporting efficiency, and we hope you found the content both valuable and informative. For more RegTech insights, our upcoming RegTech Summit New York will be held on the 15th of November in New York City. Financial institutions are invited to sign up for free at either datamanagementreview.com or intelligenttradingtechnology.com.